WrestlingGuide.com.
Once again, whether you like it or not, this is Wrestling Guide Radio here on WrestlingGuide.com. And again, as always, I am your host, Dirt, from the Video Game Losers at VGLosers.com, bringing you this look at Monday Night Raw. First of all, I will say that TNA had a pay-per-view this weekend, and that's enough about that. Also, for those of you who tuned in to my SmackDown show on Friday, I do have to admit that there was a mistake there towards the end. I've been called out on it, so you guys are going to get the explanation here. But yes, when I was reading my notes on what happened in the main event, besides the fact that I was half asleep at the time, I had typed in my notes, Jeff Hardy climbed the ropes, something like this. Jeff Hardy climbed the ropes. And then for some reason, I typed Matt Hardy attacked him. And what I meant to say was that Jeff Hardy came off the ropes and attacked Edge. But for whatever reason, I typed Matt instead of Jeff, and I typed attacked instead of, you know, whatever, the Swanton or whatever the move was that he did. So while I was reading it, I got to that point, and it said Matt Hardy attacked him, and it didn't, I knew it didn't make sense. I was like, I don't remember Matt Hardy being in the match, but that's what was written in my notes. So I was just, okay, well, that must have, you know, I must have forgotten. Because, you know, you watch, what do they make now? 8 hours of WWE wrestling a week, and things start to blend together. And you kind of forget distinctions from one show to another. So it said Matt Hardy in my notes. I said Matt Hardy on the show, and I apologize for that. There was no Matt Hardy in that match. So I was called out on that on the VG Losers message board, so I'm owning up to it, and there you go. All right, now, getting into last night's Monday Night Raw. For those of you who saw it, basically the speech that Vince gave at the beginning of the show, his in-ring promo against the fake Kroenke, was pretty much what Vince has been saying backstage for the last week. Ever since they found about the scheduling snafu, and there is a problem, Vince, his whole attitude has been that if Stan Kroenke would just call him and apologize and say they needed to make a change, Vince would have done it. And in fact, that's what he was planning on doing from the very beginning, was to work out a deal where they were actually going to tape Raw on Sunday night. It would be broadcast taped on Monday. And then they would continue to do all their house shows and their SmackDown and whatever. Because Stan Kroenke refused to actually get on the phone and talk to McMahon himself, we got what we got. And what we got was not fantastic. From what I understand, creative was given very little room to maneuver as far as putting the show together. This was pretty much Vince. The opening 20 minutes, the closing 20 minutes was all Vince. And then the little things in between, they were allowed to, you know, do whatever storylines they were working on there. But as far as everything going on with the main event, all these guys, the promos, everything like that, that was Vince. That was what was in Vince's mind. That's what he put together. So, I guess all we can say is thank goodness that as much as we hate the writers, they're at least there, and Vince isn't writing Raw every week. Also, the show opened. Michael Cole and Jim Ross were there doing commentary. Jerry Lawler is one of the guys in the main event because Big Show attacked him last week, so this gave Jim Ross a chance to do Raw again, which they thought would help with the ratings. And right in the first opening seconds, when you could see that the top half of the arena was blocked off, it was tarped off, it was dark, all the lights were off, Jim Ross announces that they have a capacity crowd. If you want to say capacity means you filled up the mezzanine level, then yes, they were correct. But numbers, from what I've heard, was somewhere around 8,000. Just to give you an idea, a typical Raw has somewhere around generally 17 to 22,000 fans, depending on the arena that they're in. 17,000 is a low number, 22 is a high number. Most of their pay-per-views are held in arenas that hold 27,000, but sometimes you still see them in the 20-22 range just because of the markets that they're trying to move into. But for the most part, 17 to 22,000 is what you're going to find on a typical Raw. So for last night's show, it was 8,000. So their capacity crowd was about a third of really what should have been in that arena, in the Staples Center. Regardless, though, the crowd was pretty hot for what was going on. They, of course, popped for everything that was pro-Lakers and anti-Nuggets. It really played into their hands, and on a local level, that worked. Unfortunately, once you kind of expand out beyond that, for someone like me who lives in Illinois, this meant absolutely nothing. And there was just a whole lot of, okay, whatever, let's keep moving. In fact, I'm such a non-sports fan that when they were in Chicago and Santino was talking about the guy in the Chicago Cubs, I had no idea what he was talking about. You know, I'm a couple hours south of Chicago. I can get my car, drive up there, and make it there in time, you know, to have lunch. And it meant nothing to me because I don't watch sports. So for a lot of fans tuning in watching the show, even though they got the recap video and they knew there was this problem, this whole idea of it being a Lakers versus Nuggets thing was just kind of like a who cares, you know, really didn't make any difference. Anyway, the fake Nuggets owner came out. I believe he had a basketball in his hand, just so you knew the moment you saw him who he was supposed to be. They had a fake president of the NBA, a fake commissioner of the NBA, and Jack Nicholson, a fake Jack Nicholson, all sitting ringside and, gave them the basketball, and they all, you know, played off like they knew each other. And he got in the ring and did his little spiel about how he's more important than wrestling, and, he doesn't care if he has to push a Monday Night Raw out of the way to do his basketball game. That's what he's going to do. So, of course, Vince came out and just called him stupid and whatever. And I think one of the most entertaining things is that Vince said he was going to create his own basketball league, call it the XBA, kind of like the XFL he had several years ago. And he said it was going to be a dismal failure because he was going to have Stan Kroenke run it. Ha 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 ha. Let's not forget just how terrible the XFL was, how it got such poor ratings. It lost so much money, it lost so many fans, it lost so much interest that the team that actually won the XFL championship that year didn't get their XFL championship rings that they were supposed to get because Vince didn't feel like paying for them. That's how bad the XFL was. That's how miserable it was. So to make jokes about the XBA being a miserable failure, it doesn't matter if Stan Kroenke is running events. You couldn't do football. It's bad to make jokes about basketball. So anyway, Vince basically, he goes, well, you think you can shove around the WWE universe, huh? And the fake Kroenke goes, yeah. And Vince goes, well, when you shove the WWE universe, the WWE universe shoves back, and he shoves him down to the ground. And the guy powders out, and that's the end of the segment. And you're just kind of like, what? Like, that's it? Like, that's the payoff? Like, seriously. Vince McMahon returns to Raw, does this dumbass little skit, and all he does is push the guy down. This is one of those instances where Vince McMahon should have been in the ring running this guy down, and you should have had someone come out like Batista or John Cena or MVP to come up and say, you know, thanks, Vince, for coming back. It's good to see you again. Glad to have you on Raw. By the way, since I'm here, is there anything I can do for you? And have Vince just kind of give him a look, have them turn around and attack the guy. You know, give him a finisher. Put him in a submission hold. Do something. But that shove, it was all it invokes in my mind is the finger poke of doom. And if you were a fan of WCW and you recall the finger poke of doom, this is not a good thing that you want to emote. All right, well, that's enough out of that. Miz came out. He was wearing a Cleveland Cavaliers jersey. I guess they're in the playoffs, too. I don't know. Like I said, I don't watch sports. So he's wearing a Cavs jersey. He said something about how they're going to win the title. Whoever plays in the Cavs, that dude, LeBron James, is like the Miz. He's awesome. John Cena's a phony poser like Kobe Bryant. Something about chasing Shaq away. I don't know. I thought Shaq and Kobe were on the team. That shows you how closely I follow this stuff. Cena finally came out. He came out to no music. Nothing. It was just like he was listening backstage and he said, I gotta do something about it. And he turned and walked out, so there was no entrance, nothing like that. He just started walking straight to the ring to take out the Miz. Of course, right as he gets up on the apron, Legacy runs out. Cody Rhodes, Ted DiBiase, and they start attacking him. So this calls out Batista, and of course, Batista comes out wearing, Batista's a big guy. You've seen Batista, you know, you see him on the show, you know how big he is. You see him stand next to a normal person, he's a big dude. I think he stole a pair of jeans from a 12-year-old boy and was wearing those because they were so tight. It was so hilarious. He looked like the dude from The Incredibles. If you've seen The Incredibles, Mr. Incredible has that huge torso, those huge arms, huge chest, and then like this tiny little midsection with these tiny little legs. And that's what Batista looked like, squeezed into those jeans. It was hilarious. And of course, they were so tight, he could barely even flex his knees, which, you know, probably because of his knees, he needed that. But regardless, Batista came out for the save. Then, of course, Big Show runs out. Jerry Lawler runs out. Everybody's involved. And finally, Cena and Batista clear out the ring. So there's your setup for the big five-on-five at the end of the show that night. Go to commercial, come back. We get Kelly Kelly versus Maryse. And, excuse me. Kelly Kelly, of course, gets this shot because Maryse sprayed something in the eyes of Mickie James last week during the Diva Battle Royal thing. So Kelly Kelly got her chance to be in this match with Maryse. And it was not good, but it was not as bad as I was expecting. I really have to say I'm down on women's matches these days in WWE. And as far as this one, of course they did botch some things, but not as terribly as I expected. The problem was that they go to the outside, and Maryse grabs Kelly Kelly and throws her into the announce table, and the ref calls for a DQ. As if every week we don't see someone getting thrown into the announce table, or getting their head smashed on the announce table, or getting thrown over the announce table, or whatever. Kelly Kelly flies over the announce table, and the ref calls the match. So, you know, whatever. What can you do? Not a lot you can do about it. DQ match was worthless, so it doesn't matter. Fake Jack Nicholson backstage with the Bella Twins on him. Hornswoggle and Goldust come out and want to get some acting tips. So they do a scene from A Few Good Men. Of course, the You Can't Handle the Truth. Goldust goes back to his Tourette syndrome thing and starts doing the gobbledygook in the middle, stuttering, repeating himself. Of course, he turns and he says something about, you know, well, I was electrocuted a couple of years ago, but I'm okay now. And It was funny, but it went on a bit too long, and you could tell that the guy who was the Jack Nicholson impersonator was not someone who normally talks. He was normally someone who just sits there and smiles and waves. He's the type of guy who you'd see in the back of one of those bad Leslie Nielsen spoof movies, like 2001 A Space Travesty, or, you know, one of those that it's on Comedy Central, but it's on Comedy Central at Saturday at 1 in the afternoon when no one's watching, you know. He's one of those type guys. And so, of course, when he talked, he sounded like he had this weird Italian accent or something. So it was kind of funny, especially see Goldust doing that gimmick again. But at the same time, it was just kind of like, it probably went about 3 minutes, maybe four, and it probably should have been no longer than two. You know what I'm saying? So Anyway, Ric Flair and Batista were backstage. Flair said he was going to call out Randy Orton, and Batista said, you know what, why don't you wait till after the pay-per-view? I'm going to take care of him at the pay-per-view. I'm going to wipe the floor with him. The next night when he comes out, he's going to be weak. He's not going to be 100%. Why don't you call him out then? And Ric Flair's basically went off on Batista. You know, are you calling me old? The 16-time world champion Ric Flair. It doesn't matter. I'm not the type of guy to call out a guy when he's not 100%. I'm going to call him out when he's 110%, and I'm still going to mop the floor with him. That was Ric Flair's mindset. That's what he says to Batista. So Batista, I kind of get the feeling that Batista, of course, is going to turn heel sometime in the next couple months. They need a big top heel. You know, the big slow is not going to do it. They're going to need someone to mix it up with Randy Orton a little bit more. So they're looking to turn Batista heel at some point. And I don't know. This didn't seem to play into it for me. He didn't sound condescending to Ric Flair and telling him down. And Ric Flair didn't seem that wholly offended by what Batista was saying. I mean, he definitely was not happy that Batista was saying this, but at the same time, you know, it didn't really seem to draw too much conflict between them. So I don't think that really worked out like they expected. Now, next match. Triple threat to earn a number one contendership to the United States title. Kofi Kingston versus Matt Hardy versus William Regal. And yes, it's Matt Hardy. It's not Jeff. Okay, I checked. All right, double-checked. So, basically, Kofi Kingston got the win on this. It was actually a pretty good match. I noticed Kofi missed a couple things. There was a leg sweep that he didn't hook right, and there was something else. But for the most part, I think this match came off really well. Matt still playing off the hand injury. Regal is awesome. Kofi Kingston, like I said, he's one of these up and coming guys who's really going to do something special here, so I think this match, all in all, turned out really well. The problem was MVP came out after the match started to go sit at the announce table and do commentary. When he came out, the fans booed. I don't think these fans understand that he's a face now. It was the same way when he got involved in the main event. When he came out, people seemed kind of confused. They didn't understand why he was supposed to be a good guy. These are people who come to Raw because they watch Raw. They don't watch SmackDown. They don't know anything about SmackDown. They know that he's supposed to be a heel because he was a heel at Survivor Series or whatever. And he supposedly made a bit of a face turn, but these are not the people that watch Raw every week. They don't know that. This show, they had 8,000 people, like I was talking about earlier, and they were handing out tickets on the street. They were standing in front of the building, you know, going down a couple blocks and just papering the place with tickets. So there are a lot of people watching this who are like, oh, I watched Raw a couple years ago. No idea MVP is supposed to be face. When Kofi Kingston got the win, MVP was smiling. He was like, yeah, I'm glad he got the shot. Kofi comes up afterwards and is looking at the title belt, and MVP's showing it to him. He's like, yeah, I'm glad you got the opportunity. You know, let's make this a good match. Very much face on face. But you could tell that the crowd was waiting for MVP to clock him with the title belt. You could tell that they were just waiting for something to happen because they don't see MVP as a face. They needed to do something here as far as playing to the crowd to show MVP as being a face, and they kind of failed on that. That was a lack of foresight on their part working with the crowd. They showed Flair coming out, calling out Orton. Orton said he could beat up Flair. One thing about Orton has this tendency to come out wearing a t-shirt but in his wrestling trunks. So he looks like a dude who just woke up and has walked around in his underwear. It's not the best look you're going to go for, especially with your world champion. It's a little silly. It's one thing, you know, to come out in your wrestling gear, because, you know, guys wrestle in trunks. I mean, they just wrestle in their little trunks, so that's what they do. But when you're wearing a shirt that's hanging down almost to your knees, and you've got your little wrestling trunks on underneath, it just looks like you're walking around in a pair of tidy whiteys, and you're trying to cover it up with a long shirt. They need to stop doing that. Anyway, at least Orton shirts don't look like the garbage airbrush on the side of a 70s van type shirts that Triple H always wears. But anyway. Orton says he could beat up Flair, but he would never lower himself to beating up a 60-year-old, you know, has-been old man. Orton is trying to talk. He's trying to say basically that Chris Jericho is willing to beat up on Ric Flair, but Orton's not, because he's not going to beat up on an old man because it's beneath him. But of course, Ric Flair keeps interrupting him. Ric Flair's like, just shut up and fight. Just shut up and fight. Come in the ring. Shut up and fight. There was a lot of heat building on that. I thought it was a very good angle. It worked pretty well. Flair basically ended up slapping Orton across the face. Orton beat up on Flair until Batista came running out to make the save. So this is, again, Batista running out to make another save. And when Orton goes to leave, Mr. Kennedy comes out and makes his return. So Mr. Kennedy... Yeah, the funny thing about Mr. Kennedy is that when he first came out on SmackDown, they tried to play him off... I know this is going to sound odd to a lot of people, but they tried to play him off as a cool West Coast type of guy, with the way he dressed, the way he talked. He was supposed to seem like a slick L.A. type person. It's hard to explain a whole lot unless you just go back and watch those tapes to kind of see how they were trying to position him as a heel. Now that he's a face, and because of, you know, the way they're trying to position him, he's been allowed a little more freedom and a little more ability to kind of play with his character. Even though he's from Wisconsin, I believe he's from Green Bay or somewhere in those parts, he's trying to play himself now as if he's a Southerner. If you listen to the way he talks, the way he moves, of course he's a big fan of Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he wants to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's always been his dream, is to be Stone Cold. If you listen to him talking, he had a little bit of a Southern drawl in his speech. He has his haircut made to look like more of a, you know, Alabama, Georgia, you know, somewhere around those guys. A guy who'd be driving a pickup truck. It's something that he's been trying to push for, is to make himself seem more Southern so that he can kind of push himself into that Stone Cold mold. And I don't know, it just seemed kind of funny to me, the way that he's kind of morphed. They've given him more freedom to be himself, and instead he's making himself more of a character. It's just amusing to me. Regardless, Kennedy came out and announced, of course, that he was going to be the final man in the 10-man main event, and that was that. It's kind of really pointless, but, you know, you got to announce that he's the guy anyway at some point, and they decided to do it here for whatever reason. Next, they had Santino come out. Mixed tag match. It was Santino and Mickie James versus Beth Phoenix and Chavo Guerrero. I said before, I thought Regal was getting in the mix here, but instead it was just to play up Regal's run back at the U.S. title. This is Santino and Chavo continuing that whole feud, which was fine. They set it up for a match at Extreme Rules. It's going to be Santina versus Vicky Guerrero in some kind of gimmick match. And this match was to decide what the gimmick was. Whoever won the match got to decide the gimmick. And so it was a fun little match back and forth. Of course, Mickie James is a solid worker. Chavo Guerrero is a solid worker. Beth Phoenix is a good worker. And Santino, I always enjoy Santino. So the match worked out really well. But... Mickey got the win, and so Santino announced that he's going to pick a match, and so he was going to pick a hogpen match. And the problem was, he announces this is a hogpen match, so you can get dirty with your hogs, and he starts making these pig noises and everything. What's a hogpen match? Like, what does that mean? I understand that probably what that means is they're going to have a little kiddie pool full of mud, and they'll probably have an inflatable pig in there. They might even, who knows, they might even have an area tarped off and have some real pigs in there. I have no idea. Probably put a little wooden fence around it, and that's what they're going to wrestle in. But he's just going to announce, this is a hog pen match. Oink, 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 oink. What does that mean? Like, seriously, what does that mean, a hog pen match? Like, are they going to be tied in any sort of way? Do they get locked into this thing? Like, how does that even work? Just means they're going to be wrestling in mud, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know for certain, but I'm guessing that it just means it's going to be a mud wrestling match, and they're going to call it a hog pen match. It just died. Like, it could have been funny, it could have been interesting, but instead they just had him, you know, like, well, tell everybody it's going to be a hog pen match, and he said, okay, and he went out and did it, and nobody knew what the heck he was talking about. So, just kind of died on that segment. Big Show and Miz backstage. Big Show said, you know you're going to be in our big 10-man match. That's fine. If you want to attack John Cena, you want to push him around a little bit, do whatever, but you don't get to pin him. I get to pin him. Big Show basically says, I'm the guy who's actually having the feud with John Cena, not you. And kind of put the Miz back in his place. Goldust and Hornswoggle beat Festus and the Brian Kendrick. Of course, this is playing into the whole Brian Kendrick is trying to find the right tag team partner to take out the Cullens. And so he brought out Festus, and of course, Festus wasn't doing a good job. Goldust actually looked like $1 million here. It hit the final cut for the pin. Goldust did a great job. But Kendrick decided he was going to punish Festus with a chair shot, but the Cullens were actually sitting ringside doing commentary, and when they saw Kendrick going for the chair and getting ready to hit Festus, Primo ran over and rang the bell, which of course set Festus off, and Kendrick ran for it. So Kendrick still in search for a tag team partner. I have no idea where they're going with that, but whatever. Next was your 10-man main event, Mr. Kennedy, MVP, Batista, John Cena, and Jerry Lawler versus Big Show, Randy Orton, Ted DiBiase, Cody Rhodes, and The Miz. The only important thing really that happened in this match was that MVP got the pin. MVP was able to get the win. So out of all these guys, all the different storylines crossing over and whatnot, MVP was able to get the pin and get the win under his belt, which is very good for MVP. They've had a lot of mixed signals with him, moving him to Raw. He's definitely a guy who could be a top-tier guy if they'd let him. Of course, he has a bit of an attitude problem backstage. He had a problem with the drug testing guys, basically trying to belittle the guys who were doing the drug testing. I don't know if he was just being an ass, if he thought he was being funny or whatever, but that really hurt his standing in the company for a while. So I don't know if they finally realized that he learned his lesson and he's going to be a better man about it from now on or what the deal is, but MVP got the pin and that's good for him. So overall, the show, of course, the segment with Kroenke at the beginning was just death. And the ladies match was terrible. The hog pin match, of course, it didn't work. The match with Brian Kendrick and Festus, it was fine for what it was, but nothing fantastic. They didn't really do anything with Batista versus Flair. They just kind of moved it along. On the whole, it was not a good show. But it was not a bad show. It was not the worst show they've ever done. It wasn't terrible like a lot of the Raws have been. So I'm still going to put this on a mostly positive note, because once that initial segment with Kroenke was over, they really didn't talk about it much. They didn't deal with it a whole lot until the end came back. So I'm just going to say that's fine, whatever, and we're going to move on from there. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. I hope you enjoyed listening to the show today. I hope I didn't mess anything up like I did on the SmackDown show. But my hope is to, again, come back on Friday, get the Thursday night feed on SmackDown, and come back Friday and do another podcast for that. So hopefully I'll catch you guys then. Make sure you stay tuned to WrestlingGuide.com. See all the updates that Duvall has planned this week, all the news and all of that kind of stuff. And, of course, if you want to stop by VGLosers.com and check out some of the other stuff we're doing, you can always do that too. So nice talking to everybody, and we'll see you next week or later this week or whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about.